Ready?
Really cool guys. All right, Planning Commission, welcome back for another exciting year. I want to extend again my appreciation for all of your service to the city and the time that you spend. I think our citizens don't know the value and the time that we do commit, but it is appreciated because I think the staff.
That's
you
so
guys
true.
As well spend a lot of time to make these meetings happen. So with that, I'll call to order the regular meeting of the North End Planning Commission for Thursday, January 12, 2017. First item of business is to approve this evening's agenda. Do I have a motion?
Move that you accept it as written.
Okay, and a second?
Second.
Any comments or changes? All those in favor of tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye.
Agenda is approved. Next item of business is to approve the minutes for our December 8, 2016 Planning Commission meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, a motion to approve the minutes by Commissioner Lucky and a second.
Lucky.
A second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any discussion or comments or changes? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for December 8th say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. It's unanimous. All right, next item of business is public comment on non-agenda items. Does any member of the public wish to address the Planning Commission this evening?
Well, I'm kind of out of the loop as far as what's on the agenda. I just drop in, have a look at what goes on.
And there'll still be a public hearing scheduled for this item. We're just kind of talking it over at this stage. So you're welcome to come back with a comment too.
All right.
And sir, do you wish to make a public comment?
I have a
please state your name and address for the record.
Steve Seeker. I'm at 512 Ballarat.
Whatever you're comfortable doing.
All right. This is a copy of a presentation I gave at the recent city council, and I was asked to come and give it a planning meeting, too. Go ahead. All right. Yeah, I'm going to have to. I'm a lifelong area resident and have lived in downtown North Bend for 25 years, and I also own property in North Bend. And I wanted to speak in regards to the large-scale tract development occurring in North Bend and the density that I'm seeing. It's shocking to see the transformation of the valley open space and the semi-rural working-person small towns to dense suburban development completely out of character with an intent of keeping the valley as a scenic destination. A quick view of Google Maps shows how widespread our open space has been turned into out-of-character, big-box housing development, and out-of-scale drugstores, and future ball fields with overhead lighting that will shine until late at night. This loss of open space is permanent. What visitor to the area wants to see subdivisions covering the valley floor and crawling up the valley hillsides, especially surrounding some of the most spectacular destinations in the state? And the elk herd that is such a feature of this valley will not be able to adapt to small, disconnected sections of forage. The scenic Snoqualmie banners along Railroad Avenue can only be considered ironic as they are placed next to one of the biggest developments in the history of the valley. Snoqualmie Falls now has this big hulking suburb over it, which is about also to take over the other side of 202 along Mill Pond and Toco Roads. As anyone who has tried to cross North Bend Way can tell you, all this development has led to an uncomfortable level of suburban congestion. It was really disappointing to see the Pulte Homes and Polygon Homes project spin up, yet another anonymous housing development contributing to the worsening traffic congestion and loss of small town character that everyone says is vital to this area's economy. Soon it will be difficult to take photos of Mount Si or other scenic spots in the valley without also having a track development in the foreground. In the current development trend, it's such a dense nature and is identical to any other suburban development you can find anywhere else. So it contributes nothing unique to the character and symmetry of the valley. It's just buildings. It's rapidly becoming pointless to live in the valley as the features that made it unique are rapidly being converted to development. They used to worry about the towns of Snoqualmie and North Bend turning into an expansion of Snoqualmie Ridge. Now I worry about the towns becoming another Issaquah or Sammamish. What a heartbreaking loss it would be to not preserve what's left of the valley's open space and our unique small-town character before it's completely gone. Mayor Herring recently defined small-town character as neighbors talking to each other in dense developments and kids playing in the street. With all due respect to the mayor, that is not small-town character. That's a digital description of suburban sprawl.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for listening.
With that, any further public comment?
I think we're going to have to process what he was saying. Like, not going to add anything to it.
Okay.
That aside, okay, if I hang on to this for a moment.
Yep.
Yeah, I will need that.
Yeah. Should we have an extra copy?
Yeah.
Okay, the next item of business is amendments to the cottage housing regulations. And Ms. Eastep, if you want to inform us of any updates or changes since we last saw this.
Well, the document, you can tell, has been mainly reorganized. Do you want me to start with just a little brief, since we have some people in the audience? So I'll just kind of give a brief of what we're here for. So tonight we're talking about cottage housing zone, the cottage housing regulations that affect our cottage zone, which is in the orange area, mainly between North Bend Way and 202, and, excuse me, North Bend Way and Cedar Falls. The city council basically placed a moratorium on development in this area in an effort to allow time to really dig deep into the cottage regulations, the regulations that would guide growth in this area, and come forward with code amendments that would allow what they felt was a true cottage, so a smaller home. So right now our cottage is defined at 1,700 square feet or larger, excluding the garage, which is quite big. And their kind of guidance to you guys was 1,500 square feet. And they actually spent almost six meetings talking about this, and they really felt that the way the cottage developments are regulated in Kirkland seems to be kind of the direction that they gave us. On top of that, this corridor is heavily treed with pretty mature forests, and it allows for some unique opportunity for tree preservation along the corridor. So they also wanted to incorporate that, because that's been something that the community has definitely been interested in seeing, that tree-lined Cedar Falls. On the north side of this corridor, you have Tanner Trail. So that's part of what this area would be dealing with when developing. What else? So they felt like they wanted to see tree preservation throughout the developments. They wanted corridors, landscape, tree preservation, natural corridors between developments, so it didn't feel like the typical suburban neighborhood. It felt more like a true cottage. And then they also thought that because the area is such a large swath of area zoned in the city, typically cottages are infill. So to break up the mass of potentially a lot of small homes being built right in that area, there was a concept of allowing some standard size homes to be integrated, a neighborhood of those to be integrated in. So that is where we are. You guys kind of were introduced to this in December, and possibly one more meeting before that, but mainly in December. The big disclaimer, I do want to really state that right now there is a lot of code amendments and a lot of projects going on in the city. So I feel like this is still at the level of conversation. I feel like we want to make a lot of changes to this just to make sure it's clear. Maps are, pictures are included or maps are included where they need to be. So tonight, what I think we really want to kind of extract is any kind of more bigger picture fatal flaws, because in the next round, we are going to go back and really start dialing in on the form and function of the actual regulation. So that's kind of what we're here to do. There is a provision in this code that would allow cottages to be built at twice the density in a walk radius around from in downtown and a walk radius in the LDR, which is basically, it's very small. It ends up being just that small LDR area east of the roundabout, and it probably touches on a little bit of the Silver Creek area to the north. Yeah, we're going to put a map in that so you can see exactly what that 10-minute walk radius is. But it's not that big because it's not a speed walker. It's an average walker.
My speed is about a half a football field.
So we took out that confusing chart, and what we tried to do is just list the items. So what would you prefer? Do you want to go through?
So that's what I want to ask the Planning Commission, just to get some order, maybe some efficiency. We go through page by page, and if you have a comment, we address it, or not, we move forward. Any other thoughts or preferences?
Sounds good.
Okay. Yes. Mr. Ryan,
yes.
I thought there was a question or a comment.
That's his yes.
Okay.
We've all seen that before. It's a,
okay, it's a, I just picture, noticed
it's
that.
It's a look that transcends the whole project. That is like,
okay. As we go through this, the introduction was, in our last meeting, we talked about some developments on Snoqualmie Ridge, and we talked about Beaux-Arts in Bellevue. I had the opportunity to visit both of them, so they're kind of my thoughts as far as where I'm going to be discussing some changes. Okay. The first part of our package is not numbered. It's the cottage residential carriage and two-unit homes main page, which reflects that it's in draft format. And Scott, you were asking for, you know, good, clear language, right? So.
Yeah, and sorry the pages didn't, numbers didn't go in there. That's a...
Yeah, go by our headers.
I did on that one.
Yeah, okay. What section?
The 1811.020. Just looking at a couple sentences into that paragraph, these standards are intended to address the changing composition of households and the need for smaller, more diverse, and often more affordable housing choices. So I guess as we go in and we learn about the housing types to find, maybe we can talk about which ones would be affordable.
Okay. Anything else?
On that same page?
Yes.
So I have this couple of, I don't know, housekeeping, what you call them. So under 1811.020, for properties located within the cottage residential zone, that's the first place we're saying that those words should be followed by an acronym that explains what the acronym is.
Yeah, it should define it.
Can you tell me again what section that was?
1811.020.
Just because we quickly follow that with a DC zone and an MR zone. And then at the end of that sentence, the word and mandated seems to be redundant to the word required. Just struck me as interesting. And then I see our city council is not here, but ADA requirements, the Disabilities Act, makes me think that when we talk about walking in our code, we might be setting ourselves up for discrimination issues. putting it out there.
So the term walking as opposed to?
Travel distance, walkway distance, something that's not talking about walking.
Okay.
I would want to run that by something else. I haven't picked it up in the other codes, so maybe it's not there, or maybe I just didn't catch it. And it may not be an issue, it just struck me. But I'm done. So again, I have the same thing circled. It's for opposite reasons.
Okay.
So to me, cottage housing has nothing to do with affordable housing. In fact, they're opposed to each other in my mind. It's because if you allow the affordable housing concept to be a focus, I think you quickly draw in folks that say high density equals high rents. Now you have potential rental neighborhood versus high quality folks who need to travel to town because there's a driving concept.
So let's pause on that. So again, I understood from City Council that more affordable, lower cost housing, not necessarily affordable as under any certain government guidelines, is affordable. Is this the right term that we should use here, or is there something better that we could call it a lower cost housing option, or something that doesn't have the word affordable in which has the connotation that you're going for something that is lower income housing?
Well, unless I'm not seeing exactly, we use the term more affordable housing choices, and the reality is a smaller house will always be a tad more affordable in theory. Where that becomes a little muddy is when you have a really well-finished small home.
That may not be always true. Mm-hmm.
That's why, as you said, where that gets muddy.
Yeah, I think that you could have a grassroots type home, 1,500 square feet, and be the high-end housing. I think they can call for in this trip. So, as I was thinking the same thing, this seems like we're using cottage as our euphemism to affordable. And I want to make sure we're not.
Same here. That's where I was. Because I thought that we were told that cottage was high.
Yeah.
Like Viking kind of stoves.
Yeah. Right.
So. I wouldn't necessarily.
And that's our opinion, not what you're thinking of. I think we're looking at this would be a more of an upper middle class to high end type housing.
Well, the people that develop cottage companies say that their market is the more established empty nesters and things like that. And those people are looking, they've already, had the stove that never works. But that being said, whether it's ultimate high-end or just somewhere kind of in the middle, I think what you guys are saying is you don't expect these to be affordable, meeting King County standards for affordable under 80% of median.
It's affordable.
Yeah.
Want the builders to understand what we want, not what they build. They say it's not a higher-end, but I think we want in a higher-end community in the strip, not what they're telling us what they build.
Well, and my issue with the wording is simply that most people, I think, that are in this every day, when they hear affordable housing, I think they immediately think government assistance, right? That's the term that's been coined by most municipalities around. That's what they use when they talk about doing that. The developer gives away some development rights to have affordable housing inside their community, or there's some kind of incentive tax-wise. It's really always it's not a market-driven piece of the puzzle. That's why I have an issue with using the words in the code.
So I'm hearing consensus. Now, Scott, your argument's more inquisitive of show me where this is going to meet affordability. If we change the word, does that kind of solve your question, I guess?
Jim brought up an interesting point. I think, we do have to define what affordable is, because affordable to me, where I was going with it, I guess right now, with the market the way it is, would be a house that might be, I don't even know if you could get something for $300,000, but maybe $300,000 to $450,000 or something, not $600,000. I think that's what that residents would like, locals especially, just someone doesn't need to be a full-on professional to buy a home, I guess, is kind of, I think, what the city council wanted. And so that's why one of my questions was, is the two-unit home affordable? I don't know. I mean, we can talk about that later, but I was just wondering, like, which specific product here is affordable and not affordable per, I forget the terminology, through some assisted...
King County, yeah, program, yeah. Or government.
But just affordable to someone who's not, like, a long professional.
So maybe I need to clarify, the original reason for the cottage zone pre-recession, I'm talking 2007, was the council was trying to come up with a non-subsidized way to create more affordable homes, okay, not ones that meet any government program or anything like that. From once the recession was over and blah, 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 and we reevaluated this section, what they've learned is, hey, these aren't necessarily going to be these could be, you know, price per square foot actually more expensive than a standard size home. So I don't, you know, think that right now there isn't a they kind of lost that parameter. So, you know, if we want something like that, it actually has to go in as a requirement, because price per square foot, I would expect the cottages to be more. But what I'm hearing is we can kind of have a placeholder on maybe what's the term we should be using versus more affordable.
More affordable housing choices. Is it lower cost than a single family residence? Is that what we're trying to say, or is it something else?
Or even the question I have is, are you even wanting to address affordability rather mix?
I love the sentence right up into the word and after the word diverse.
And often, okay.
So more diverse, period.
And get rid of the affordable. Yeah.
That's just me.
Well, I would change that so you would just strike and often more affordable. And then it would read the need for smaller, more diverse housing choices.
One comment I have, to look back at the City Council's letter, and it specifically says in a bullet point, impose the citywide moratorium on cottage housing to ensure they are a more affordable housing product. So what do they mean? What is their intent? So we have the language here, but...
I think the goal was that they are regulated to a smaller... So like when...
Square footage.
Yeah, which ultimately, I mean... Yeah, if you assume you aren't going to own a lot because we're creating a cluster requirement and you assume that they're going to be 1,500 square feet or less, they are going to come at a lower option price point than
maybe.
I mean, let's just, you know, yeah. And, yeah. So.
I'm trying to connect what this gentleman was saying. To the council and what we're talking about tonight. You know, we're talking about the main throughway for our community's North Bend way. And as people are driving through that road, it's crucial that they feel as though they're in a small town but high quality community. Not other communities developed, like Issaquah and others, who have seen it almost requirement on them to build high infrastructure for affordability. I think that North Bend Way is going to be what people first see and last see as they're driving through to get to wherever they're going. And that's where we ought to be showcasing what we are as a small town. And I think that we ought to be showing our best foot forward in that area. Not show them the backyards of affordable cost housing where people put everything in the backyard, including a few other things. We need to have a neighborhood that really shows who we are. If you get deeper into our community, you'll find other things like this. We don't want to put the type of housing in that strip is not going to show them as to who we are, whether it's under the category of affordable or not. We need to show who we are as a small town. And I think that's quality housing, small, not necessarily affordable, but affordable to people who live there.
I could add, I'm just going to just call this a flavor part of the puzzle to me. If you, I believe, if you go to most traditional neighborhoods, knock on the door, 3,500 square feet, 2,800 square feet, you ask them, are there rooms in your house that you never use? Most of them will say, oh yeah, maybe one or two. So even they are enjoying a bigger square footage than they may choose to have. And I point out that I think a lot of the reasoning behind that is that's what it took to get the loan when they bought the house, whenever they bought the house. It's still going on today. If you have 20% down to buy something and you go to the bank and you want to borrow some money, your square footage math better add up or you're not going to get the loan. So a lot of folks, particularly in the custom building side, will build this massive, ridiculous bonus room just to be able to have a nice kitchen. So that concept is stopping the program. And I believe generationally, baby boomers, whatever you want to call it, they've got smart to that. And that's why the cottage housing thing is even going on. Because they've said, I'm not going to pay for what I don't want, and I'm writing a check. I don't have to get a loan anymore. That's what cottage housing is to me. It's for those folks. Not wasted space.
So
it
I
might
go,
be more expensive per foot.
I go back to this line. We want to just strike out and often more affordable, or we want to give staff a chance to maybe rework the sentence and see what they come up with.
Are we helping you by telling you what to say?
Well, I'm kind of, to be honest with you, I'm listening and I'm just kind of, I do think that having a mix of housing choices is what you guys are actually after. I do think this is an interesting zone that we've created. It's actually I'm kind of just pondering what I think would actually get yielded. In the meantime, I did make a note to clarify the council's perspective on what they want to see with affordability. If anything, because if we're not going to regulate affordability, it's more of a, hey, this is an alternative housing choice. And, you know, like the Polygon development is going to be more affordable than if the dwelling company came in and built. So it kind of really depends on who built. And so there's a lot of speculation in that, but in the end, you're creating an area that you can own a home and not own the ground, and share the ground in common, and share a common space, and not own. Everybody has to own their own mowers and all kinds. So the lifestyle is more affordable. So anyway, so I like the language because it's a more affordable. But really, what you're talking about is an alternative option to a lifestyle that isn't just the average lot, you know. So maybe we could look into some language that talks more about that.
Yeah, unless I feel like I'm beating the horse here, but unless you have some assumption about what people make and what their net worth is, you can't have a conversation about affordability because it's going to be different to every person, every family. Mm-hmm. Unless you're going to play the bureaucratic game and tie the affordability to some matrix that somebody figured out in some college dorm room one night. It's crazy talk. Mm-hmm. It's my thinking about the concept of affordability. It's crazy.
It does seem, though, that, and I'm not saying I agree or disagree, it seems like our intent might be different than council's. So I think even before we need to clarify, like, can we focus that in some of the HDR?
I think you were clear on what the council's intent is, that they wanted a more affordable housing choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think what our issue is calling it affordable because our first inclination of that is thinking of affordable housing under some other low-income countywide standards of affordable housing. If that's our first kind of blush at it, then somebody reading this document might misinterpret that versus having a 20-minute discussion to drill down more.
What if we use the word more reasonably priced housing choices or something? You just, because I think that is part of it. You're getting, there is like affordable.
Below market value.
Yeah, it has a connotation of, like, if I want to go buy a home based on a HUD program, I have to, the person has to show an income that meets the affordability to 80% of the median income. So there is a magic in that word. So we could say, something like that.
Yes, that's right.
When I look at the North Bend Way corridor, I think about the Snoqualmie Parkway. That parkway was first going to be developed as a two-lane road with the option to expand it if needed. They decided to go the full boat and put the full parkway in, knowing it was going to be needed at some point. I'm very concerned that we're not looking at the North Bend Way as a potential four-lane corridor. And what's going to happen to the community on both sides of that corridor as we find the ability to add that width because of what's going to happen to our traffic pattern. And so let's look at how we're looking at the corridor. Now we're still thinking about this cottage process on the south of North Bend Way. I believe that in 20 years, maybe less, maybe 10 years, we're going to be looking for two more lanes in that corridor. Where are we going to take it from?
So, Commissioner Ryan, I really appreciate your comments. I don't want to cut you short, but I do want to ask staff, when we talk, Jenna, when we talk about traffic standards, when we talk about wait times, there is this established set rule. Why is it that we have to apply the same rule that Seattle does into North Bend? Can we have different rules, or are there different things for small communities? Because our neighbors, right, when they have to wait three cars behind a stop sign, are saying that's too long. It's not 5 minutes at a stoplight, which is the standard that we'll rate an intersection at. So how can we apply these things, and that will help drive then how we view impacts of developments to meet those standards that we apply for our city? Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you have in your transportation element a section that talks about your standard for the level of service, and your standard has been set at D, okay? I think legally you can set your standard at C if you wanted to. You know, anything getting to B, or if you try to make people make large infrastructural changes when you have a level service B, you'd probably find yourself with an attorney on your right side.
You understand
but
what I was saying interferes with your comment.
It does.
Okay. We're still talking about planning for the future, and we're talking about the Tanner Trail. We're talking about closing in all of the usable space there, when we might need very well to remove all that at some future point. So when it comes to that, we need to be talking about the setbacks for the cottage projects and so on. We're not even talking about that.
Well, I think how I interpret those standards, one, we have a certain right-of-way along North Bend Way. What you're looking at when you are developing, and Jenna, correct me if I'm wrong, when you say I want to build 500 units, well, if the road can't handle that because your level of service is such that you can't improve the road, you can't build as many units, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you either have to improve the road to what we need to meet that level of service, or you can't build those units.
And we're constraining our ability to widen that road by not thinking about it. That's not good planning.
Well, if we already have the right
Yeah, we're kind of off on a tangent because this
is... I don't think we are, because we're talking about a very specific pattern. We have a map in the car that talks about the boundaries of a cottage strip. It doesn't suggest there might be a future need to widen the highway, which will impact where we put the setbacks on this community. And we're talking about higher end community or someone, it's going to be very difficult to in this community. You need to take some of your backyard.
So, the reason why I'm saying this is this whole zone does not front on North Bend Way. The Tanner Trail does. So, anybody who or Burlington Northern's property, which is going to be Tanner Trail. So, the one thing that's interesting about this area is if you develop on this area, you have to actually buy Tanner Trail, dedicate it back to the city, build a trail, and then you have frontage on North Bend Way. So none of these parcels can we say, oh, you know, you got to give us X amount more of North Bend Way, because they don't front on North Bend Way. Now, your example could be Cedar Falls, or you could use that example anywhere in town, but for North Bend Way, the right-of-way is 60 feet wide, and then we own an extra 100-foot, or Tanner Trail is an extra 100-foot corridor to the south.
Which is already being offered up to the developer to take 60 feet of that for project. So
right.
we're not providing 100 feet, we're providing 40 feet. So I'm just saying that it concerns me that the long-range view of the expansion of North Bend Way is not being considered here for this project. I think it's important to talk about it now.
Commissioner Ryan, can you point us to the page where you see the setback for that? Is it in our document, do you know? Did you read that?
I didn't read that. I know by just discussion that the right-of-way is 100 feet on the original right-of-way. It talks about it in terms of allowing the developer to acquire 60 feet of that. If they buy the entire right-of-way and deed back to the city 40 feet, they get to use 60 feet of that 100 foot. So automatically that disappears.
Well, the city is looking at doing a citywide traffic analysis based on capacity. And that is going to be probably happening very soon. So what typically happens is, because land use zoning changes all the time, which changes your capacity. So it's hard to say, 20 years down the road, we think we're going to need 4 more lanes, so we're going to start buying it up or condemning or what have you right now. So what happens is, based on the zoning in place, like what we ask for right now is if we have a standard for the street and the development's happening, they have to dedicate that standard. So their land gets dedicated to the city with the development. So, but I think what you're bringing up more is related to what we'll find with this capacity analysis traffic study, which was also done, you know, with your transportation element. Because tonight, why I feel like tonight, you know, we don't have the facts to be able to say whether we're going to need 4 lanes, 3 lanes, a center lane. That's a lot of traffic analysis and traffic engineering evaluation. That's already in our comp plan, and so we have our streets designed for what your capacity and what you have in your comp plan now. If you upzone it, then you change all the baselines and you work within that baseline. If you downzone it, you can change it, or you might not need to. So that's kind of why I think beyond the context of, you're talking much of a much more global approach to.
I'm recommending we leave 100-foot right-of-way intact rather than dividing it up between development and non.
So Commissioner Ryan, to your point, on the last page of our document, the Burlington Northern Railway, it's section F under, what is the handout exhibit A? It talks about a dedication of no less than 40 feet for Tanner Trail and open spaces, so that leaves them with 60 feet of that 100 feet. Mm-hmm. What is it that you are recommending?
That we not develop the Tanner Trail, we allow it to exist as 100 foot right of way undeveloped. So it can be used for road expansion if necessary, which it will be at some point. You'll be developing residences into the 100-foot space otherwise, and you won't be able to widen that road.
I'll have to disagree where I want to see the trail, because it's part of connectivity throughout the city that we've talked about.
Not necessary, sir. We're developing. I think we can go down Cedar Falls Road with that trail. It's a much more habitual ride. If you're a good biker, it's a lot more interesting to ride through than along the highway. We don't need that Tanner Trail for that purpose. We can access the John Wayne Trail through the Cedar Falls Road access.
So if I live in La Forest Homes and I'm telling people to park in downtown North Bend at the new Civic Plaza and bike to Mount Si Trail, you want them to come in front of my home and then cross North Bend Way where they could ride up that trail?
I want them to go on the railroad grade that is north of the highway and access it that way.
Well, can I?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of how would we use this trail.
That's how we do it. That's how the majority of the people would use that trail. They would use the old snow plowing part right away.
So I'm going to bring up a few things because this is, you know, there's a lot that we're talking about here. Number one, every city is required and should be designing for multimodal transportation. And it shouldn't be just one corridor. Like, it needs to be a very connected, very well connected. And the reason, we're in a great position to do so because we're on the valley floor. So our city is in the mountains, but we have a flat floor to ride bikes in. It's like Switzerland, but here. You know, I mean, it's an easy way to commute, whether it's a half-mile walk or what have you. So with all grant funding that's coming forward for transportation and everything, we are being asked, in fact, Puget Sound Regional Council basically is requesting that we actually, there's two times I've been requested in the last week to make sure we increase our non-motorized transportation amenities so people can get off the roads if they only want to, you know, run over to their buddy's house or what have you. The other one is when, you know, buying out Heartland, we're going to go back and ask for some more funds, and their request back to us is, okay, show us how you're going to get people from that park to your city without using a car. That's a good question. So the Tanner Trail is a really nice non-motorized transportation option for people. The other thing I just want to mention is Tanner Trail is owned by Burlington Northern Right-of-Way. So we have in our park element that it's going to cost us almost $3 million to buy it. Okay, we don't have $3 million, so we're not going to be able to buy it. So that means people can privately purchase that right away and build stuff they want if Burlington Northern wants to sell it. For example, the developer that Polygon did exactly that. Now they only did it they did it because we had a provision in here that said, oh, but you got to give us 40 feet back. But Burlington Northern could have entered into an agreement with just them to increase their development. We don't own the right-of-way, the Burlington Northern right-of-way. So what we've done here by creating this regulation is allow us to obtain the Burlington Northern right-of-way for the park, for the trail, at no cost and have developers pay for the construction of your non-motorized trail. So this little tiny provision in your code probably saves the city upwards of $3 to $5 million when you think about acquisition and construction costs for that corridor. Just by kind of being flexible to say, hey, you know, you get a little bit, we get a little bit, but you build it all and you give it to us in the end. So that's the whole bigger picture behind that provision.
It appears to me that the current project is already encroaching upon that 40-foot right-of-way by this visual site. They've actually dug into to half of the right-of-way already in terms of this developing their site. Now, maybe the 40-foot goes to the ditch line of North Bend Way. I'm not sure where our right-of-way ends and where the right-of-way begins, but it clearly shows me that they've already dug into the middle of that trail.
Well,
which is technically belongs to the city if they bought it already.
Well, that's not on the agenda item tonight, but okay. I can guarantee you that we are out monitoring every development and they're complying with our regulations.
All right, this makes me nervous.
And they do have to develop the trail, right?
Yeah, they have to landscape it and everything.
So
yeah.
They're going to be on that.
Yeah.
I don't have any confidence at this point that they're up to the following what you want them to do.
So back to our document. We were talking about affordable. I think we covered that. Housing types defined 1811.030.
I got something on that. Basically, after reading, reading the 1 through 5, I looked at number 3 as one-story cottage. So then I guess I saw number 1 as cottage. So I don't know, do we want to say two-story cottage, or is it just cottage normally? Two-story.
Let me think this through, because we added that one-story cottage. I did that, and let me think why I did, why I felt like I needed a one-story provision.
Because most cottages are built as two-story, so you want to ensure that there was one
single-story cottage mix.
Yeah, because we're requiring that, so, but you're right, it's kind of redundant. It could say a detached single-family home containing 1,500 square feet or less of gross area, regardless of whether it's a two or one story. So I almost feel like that's a good point. I don't know if we need a definition for one story, because all it says is the same. So let's delete it. I like
it said later, too, not to get ahead.
Yeah.
Don't cottages have to be single?
No, you can do a two-story. You can do a two-story cottage for sure. Yeah, so right now what I'm going to do is take that back out. And if for some reason I remember that it was really important for some reason, I'll let you know. All right.
I just have one more in that. I don't know what the carriage unit is. I was trying to kind of get that pictured in my head. If it was part of a cottage. I guess it's not, because this is only 1,500 square feet. So is it a standalone garage structure, it says?
Yeah, it's usually a carriage units are like defined as a living space of one, you know, a small living space above a garage, and then in the like the in the building code, it's like a group U, so it has a specific definition, but it's above a garage.
Being like the colonial term. Carriage being an accessory building in the old days. Kind of quaint, actually.
Yeah. Drive-through.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So,
a shackle for the horse.
So basically, in the cottage zone, this is allowing that, like, they consolidate parking sometimes, so they'll build maybe a 3 or 4 garage, and then you could build 2 cottage units above it or something like that. So
yeah, it's like a, you know, fully sustained.
It's part of it. Part of the benefit is it makes the garages that are maybe serving more than just a unit look more like a single family home. So it adds character. It makes it look more like an accessory dwelling unit.
Why not just require attached garages and make that, you know, you can have a garage anywhere you want, in front of the house, on the side of the house, or under the house. How is it that it's so specific a term? Because it's almost like you had a garage and then you built on top of that garage a livable unit. If we're just developing a new zone and new housing, I'm kind of confused.
I have a question. When I think of the term cottage, I can go a lot of different variations of what that might mean. And in this day of Airbnbs, what are the CCNRs going to be? Is this an option for people to rent out as Twin Peaks builds, thus bringing more people here? They could stay, you know, the whole mix could change, I think. So what does that really try to mean, ultimately? A law is one thing, an option to rent.
No, I have the same point, too, because that's the other part of the demographic shift. People are buying smaller houses and renting more often than they ever did before. So that, I was going to comment on this ADU concept. We got some terms here to me that sound exactly like what else we've used another term for it somewhere else in the code, like a two-unit home. Why isn't that a townhome?
Because a townhome could be four units, or it could be a row of four units, it could be a row of two, it could be a row of...
It's a shared wall is all they're saying, right? That's what makes it happen.
It's at least two, isn't it?
A townhome has to have at least two, yeah. On a two unit, it's
everything else has some guidelines.
Two unit home is 1,000 square feet. Average unit size total structure shall not exceed 2,000 square feet.
Maybe we should add that in. Just thinking that everything else has square footage. The number four doesn't.
Wait a minute. I'm not in no more than one two-unit structure.
No, in housing types defined 11.030.
Hold on.
11.4. Two-unit home.
Okay.
That would make sense to have the square footage there.
Yeah, we're reiterating what will come forward. Yeah, so I see that. Okay, we can add.
See, I have to tell you something. I think of the word carriage, and I see the number of square footage being 800, and I originally thought cottage would be 800 or 900.
Yeah.
That's my brain goes to confused about what these terms are really.
We're kind of taking what we thought we knew and redesigning them. Just like the original cottage was a little, you know, maybe it had a bedroom. And it was on the lake, right?
And not an outhouse. Cottage. Actually had a bathroom in it.
That's
good sense. I'm just picturing one of the Murphy beds you pulled out through the wall.
Saying that's not a cool thing, but you know what? What we are in right now is trends. Lots and lots of residential things happening, shifts and trends like nobody's business. Thus, when the dust settles, we are left with boxes, interesting architectural. And I'd love to see a mix as well, but I am very deeply concerned about when the next recession hits, which it will. Things are cyclical. What the dust really settles and shows us. Be proud of what we build. Be proud of our environment. And be careful with it. It's very important to make this. I know we feel that, all of us.
Yes, you said.
All right. Question back on the two.
Yes.
On the two units. All right, get past you where you were. Is there an opportunity for one of these two two-unit homes to have a carriage house attached? Can that happen?
A carriage unit is...
Then you just went to three units. Or four.
No, because a carriage is above a garage. So if you have a home...
With a shared wall.
Right.
It says in the next page on point D, point four, A4, carriage unit and two-unit homes are allowed. However, no cluster shall include more than one two-unit home. Is that where you're...
No, he's saying, could somebody build, and I'm trying to even picture it, that's why I'm hesitating. Somebody can't, I mean, I...
So detached garage
for
each of the two-unit buildings. For each detached two units, but then they have a detached garage for each. And over the garage is an ADU, and it's called a carriage house.
That is what a carriage house is, yes.
Right. So now I'm seeing a single owner could have his one half of the two-unit townhome or two-unit home and carriage house on single ownership. So he's equivalently, he's purchased, what would that be? Would it be 1,000, 1,500, 1,000 plus 800? How does that dance work?
I think you guys are overthinking these.
I'm wondering, how does he get up to that unit? Because you've got the retiree with the C-Class on one.
No, I'm getting a kick out of this. So here...
It's actually to her point. So look, here's what I'm thinking.
He's got the unit above him, and he's got to go to the garages.
I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I get out of the box, all right? So
he's stuck the puzzle master over here.
if you have, if you're allowing this two-unit thing, which I'm going to call a townhome, if you're allowing it inside the quote cottage home, remember the little single house on the lake with 800 square feet?
Yeah, maybe.
That's in our zone called cottage housing zone. So now we've created a building that's at least 2,000 square feet. It looks like it's a 2,000 square foot building standing there. Oh, by the way, there's two units in it. And maybe that same developer said, hey, you know what, each of these townhomes, which I can do one for every 12 units, I can do a two-unit building. I'm going to have little carriage houses out in front of those so that somebody can actually buy 1,800 square foot living unit. That's
but,
what they're getting.
But there, I mean, that would take so much effort to try to own.
Just spell it out.
Yeah.
Right, but you can do that now. You could do that now. You could go buy this house and buy that house.
That is so far removed from the cottage.
No, but
it doesn't belong there. Shouldn't be able to do it if we're going to stick with the concept of cottage.
Well, are you worried about the cottage structure or how people buy their product?
No, what it looks like. Well, that's
right.
That will look like an apartment complex.
So here you have
a
this is a green. Your guys are requiring clusters, right? So you're going to cluster cottages around the green. Because the whole point about a cottage is that you don't have vehicular aspects are off to the side, right? So that means you're going to have to bring in a road to provide. So all these people, in theory, are going to get access to their home by a nice little pathway here, right? So then there's going to be a spot where they're going to build some garages, okay? So what you're saying to me is, let's say this cottage is a two-unit cottage, and they build a garage that serves this guy, this guy, and this guy, okay? And now they're going to build, so that means they're going to build 800, or they're going to probably only have two 800 cottage. Carriage units above.
That guy could have one too. So there's 3 800 foot cottages above that garage.
So, the way this is written is these are different spaces. So if this guy chooses to buy this home and this space, we don't regulate that.
He's got, okay, so there's 3 800 square foot carriage homes, ADUs if you will, associated with the two structures that you call dwelling units.
The carriage unit is a separate dwelling unit.
It's associated with these. What's this? All right, so three of these, 800 times three. One of them goes here, and those two go here.
Well, first of all, they can't do 800 by three because you got to go to the you can't put that many garages together to get to that large of a garage space. So that means and the garages are only 250 per unit, right? So now you have 250, 250, and 250, so we're at what?
All right,
750. Right, so you're going to get one cottage
those are
unit.
One bay garage.
As my belt buckle comes up,
those
are
one bay.
That's better than other things.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So this
God, I can entertain.
Getting excited. That's good. We're going to have a very quick schematic to put up there. Where are the porches on those residences? Are they facing the green or are they
facing the green?
All right. Somewhere early in this document, we talked about not turning our backs to the community. In other words, have the homes facing the street, et cetera, et cetera. This is exactly the opposite. We're turning our backs to the community by our back porches to the street.
That's assuming this is the street. So all these homes basically are centered on a park, and instead of from the street seeing a bunch of cars, what you'll have is you'll have a driveway coming in here, and you'll have surface parking, and then you'll have a cluster of garage, and it was required to be to the back. So from the street, you see green and park.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just orientation.
So that's a good plan for when people have guest parties and such that you don't simply put cars on the main drag there or along that road.
It depends if they're the end unit.
Good point.
So I guess my question is, do we need to have additional structures for parking, or why can't we build those attached to the units? given all the weather that we've had, and you want this empty nester, do you want to buy a place where you have to walk so far from where you park your car? Do you not want to have the convenience of just pulling in and going upstairs?
As a renter, I'm used to walking in the, but as an owner, I don't want to walk. If I own the property, I don't want to have to walk across the open ground to get my groceries in a rainstorm into my house. That's not
small children.
Yeah. That's not owning that property.
And then I think about permeable spaces. Are we creating more pavement and coverage than we need to on a lot? So those are my kind of off the area thing. Back to you, oh wise one.
Where were we?
Mr. Lucky, you were talking about carriage units. And
we were doing your page first, and then I interrupted.
No, we were you so moved you on. Okay, so we're on housing types, we're talking about carriage units.
Okay. You were on 1150, right?
I had just one more comment before we go off the housing types. It's just a possibility of another housing type people want to consider it. I don't know exactly what it would look like, but maybe like an apartment cluster, so to speak. So it would probably have to be a single building, but there might be like 12 apartments in there. And it would be situated like in the woods like that too. And that would kind of fit the affordable piece. And
How do you envision that? That's different than a cluster of cottages. That, what are we? 24 cottages is the max.
Yeah, 12 around any one green, 24 total, and then there'll be a separation you can do.
The maximum cluster is 12 units.
Yeah.
It might be maybe by square footage, so maybe 1,000 square foot apartments. You know, whatever seems reasonable. Just another housing option, and I don't know how many. Maybe we only want one throughout the whole zone. But it's maybe different.
So you're thinking mixed rental units inside this?
They could be purchased, right? I don't even know if we can regulate that.
Maybe condos, right?
Yeah, they could be considered condos, but still have kind of the rustic, modern Northwest look. I think maybe I don't even know if we're regulating that anyway. But you know, it would fit with the forested character.
So we have a maximum cluster size of 12 units, but what you're thinking is a requirement that would say they'd be a maximum square footage, which would drive some more affordable
options. That's what it's options. Like is one way to, the only way you can maybe control costs.
So Jenna, I remember in somebody's code reading somewhere that they had a carrot. If you did something of this, then you could do something of that. Is there anything that would work here that we could drive that?
Well, your existing code allows up to 30%, I think, to be multi. You're talking about multifamily. So in your current zone, you can build up to 30% multifamily. So if you had a 100-unit cottage project, you could do 30 multifamily units. The city council has given direction to take that out and not have a mix of multifamily. They're actually having their retreat. I almost was thinking to hold off on bringing this forward to you guys because they're having their retreat next week. One concept that they all talked about pretty consistently is that they think multifamily of that nature should be closer to town, and they want to see it in downtown. So they've had some concerns with the affordable apartment complex that's proposed off of Exit 32. And they are talking about bringing that multifamily aspect into downtown. So that's how our code reads right now, though. So you could do that.
We're talking about neighborhood services on the south side, the intersection, you know, like a grocery store, or a pickup that would alleviate going to town.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's an allowed use there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You could stroll for eggs.
I'm just saying that the the idea of having a neighborhood area for markets, whatever, would take away the need to go into town for people in this community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might solve that problem in terms of what they're thinking about.
Yeah.
And as we grow, as a city, we're growing in more of a rectangle. And so as we get further away from downtown, there's other population centers that are going to create more of a hard traffic issue in the congested area if we had multiple centers. That would make it more practical. Plan. So it'd be interesting to hear what they decide on multifamily, as I think our staff has stressed multiple times, of the good practice of having multiple uses in a single zone. So it'd be interesting, because that would certainly change some of the ability in our city.
Part of it is, in this area, you kind of got to ask yourself, what's your goal? And what I'm hearing the city council say is that they want to allow a different housing choice than we have. They want to allow multifamily, but in a different, not here. And they want to enable a design that allows North Bend to retain its small town character, which that to do that, you have to incorporate open space, trees, landscaping, and what have you. And so part of it is, how much can this area really incorporate? And because what's hard about, you know, this is already going to be a difficult zone, because one developer that builds small homes might not build and cluster around a green, like a cottage company, even, you know, might not build the single family. So what will be good, what I see as a benefit, is you'll start getting different builders buying portions of a different plat. So, but then the only other gist to that is, when you incorporate a large building around the small ones, you have a kind of a size, a scale issue, possibly. You got to think about that in your design. But it could be mitigated. Anyway, but right now that's kind of one of those things that they've said don't, you know, that they wanted, they were following the Kirkland's provisions, which is, doesn't have that.
We know the Kirkland, have we seen visuals of the Kirkland provisions?
What you have in front of you is Kirkland modified to meet North Bend. So, yeah, so what we took is their regulations. The products that got built as a result of the regulations is what they like.
Do we have visuals of how this works out on the ground?
I haven't put visuals of the cottage company's site plans in again.
Cottagecompany.com. Okay. So I'll throw something else in the mix. Every once in a while, this strikes me as like, wait a minute. And this is one of those moments. I feel like we spend a bunch of time thinking about what the city council wants us to do, as opposed to making suggestions for the city council to say yay or nay to. This is, to me, this is not a facility for the council members to send it through a filter and get it back what they want. Mm-hmm. If we disagree with something, or if we have an idea that they hadn't thought of, it's our job to raise hell until they pay attention. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. And I think we're maybe doing a little bit of that with this zone. It's a unique zone. It's everybody's struggling with, well, what's it always been, and what is this new zone you're talking about? So everybody's trying to make it work. And that's the magic. We need to keep struggling. So, that's my sense. And I still don't want to interrupt you.
Okay. Can we turn the page, or is there anybody?
Yeah, I'm ready for the next page.
Okay. One of the things that I've looked at, whether you drive along, it's the Cedar Falls development that has the front doors on that street that is going by Side U, and where they're kind of right up on the sidewalk. What street is
Cedar Falls, you mean Maloney Grove?
Yeah, I think that. that's a street. Mm-hmm. So when you go down that, you know how the stoops are right up on the sidewalk. That is the difference in rural, you know, and urban to me, is how far you're set back and that there isn't a breadth of space.
You see, yeah. Homes.
Well, that's an interesting thought, because I hear that a lot. But older towns are all designed on alley grid, and that's an alley grid. And homes in small, like if you walk around North Bend downtown with the older homes, they're actually all, like the porches and stuff are 10 feet from the sidewalk and stuff. The reason why I think people feel suburban, suburbia is more the setback 30 feet vibe. But a small town is always kind of more the little quaint home that's actually pretty close. The problem is what's happening is when you create that home up close to the street, based on how they're developing them now, is you have a big box looming over the sidewalk versus what you have in downtown North Bend, which is a tiny little story and a half home that doesn't make you feel like you're kind of, you know.
But you get us a bigger backyard.
So it's interesting because the way old small towns are designed, or previously designed, they are actually close to this, and based on alley grid.
Yeah, 40 feet alley behind. The lots, 40
yeah.
feet.
Yeah.
So when we have in our development standards, the required yards is a front 20 feet, and then it says an other 10 feet. I'm not sure what you mean by other 10 feet. That side and rear?
Sorry, boss.
Yeah, let me look. You're on.
I'm just on
page blank.
1811.050, and then we went A, B, C, D, E, and I'm on H.
Okay, so from exterior property lines, so remember, like, the hard thing, try to visualize a cottage development not to be developed like, you know, front yard setbacks. So what they're saying is if anywhere the house fronts a street, it needs to be 20 feet back. If it's the side, it can be 10 feet.
Okay. And I guess I'm more concerned is the rear, and that becomes your usable space, your grill space, your mm-hmm. lounge chair, whatever it is. That's kind of like your own tiny little domain. So what is the rightful size for that? You know,
your cigar room.
Well,
your lounge chair and your table.
Well, remember, these aren't on lots.
I understand that, but
yeah. Here you break me up. I mean, here we are talking about having a rural community. We're talking about having our little lounge chairs
that barely fit on the bloody porch. You know, open your feet up.
This isn't rural.
You'll have a view.
Yeah, they'll be sitting out there. We have plenty of warm days to be enjoying. So when I went around Snoqualmie's, that was the one thing that jumped out at me. There wasn't a usable space there unless you're going to stack some bikes. Yeah. It was really pathetic, and why I bring that as a point of concern, that you ought to have some space in the back.
Well,
I don't know if 10's the right number.
Two things.
So put it out there.
Two things before we start creating rear yard setbacks, because we are not building this the same way as the other neighborhoods. So, the backyards are actually going to be where the parking is. And so, and we have another provision in the code that really basically says the rears of homes shall not face the street. Okay? So, this example, the difference is, this example, this is the lot. Okay? That's the lot. That setback only relates to this area.
Okay. So if I live in Kirkland, I might drive something. If I live in North Bend, a lot of the people here have trucks or SUVs. 12, 15 feet is going to be the minimum that they will pull in the back of their unit.
Does your grandmother drive a truck?
My grandmother used to drive a Cadillac Fleetwood.
She's the favorite.
Well, no, she was 90. She passed away. But
okay.
No,
okay.
Fleetwood Chrome is
giving you a hard time.
You marked that truck where you want. give your grandma her grill when she deserves it.
Yeah.
So, but Gary, you're thinking somebody's going to come in and park here. That's not what this is. I mean, these are homes, and then they're usually consolidated surface parking, like, you know, here. And so this is, it's done more like a multifamily development where you're not creating lot lines. So your parking standards are going to require the parking to be big enough to handle a car.
We're going to wash it.
I have to go to the garage.
You know, keep in mind, and I don't see it on this plan, I don't see much space, but you're supposed to be leaving significant trees throughout the lots in these properties, and I don't see it happening. Part of the flavor of this community is...
Before we get to that section, that's in here, and I'll invite you to join me in my conversation there. So minimum required yards, Planning Commission, think it over. Go to the ones in Snoqualmie. You know, I took my tape measure. I think 10 is minimum. I'd like to see a little more.
Yard meaning the shared green space?
Yeah. If you're backing up the trees here, then, you know, you have a driveway in between, but you can still have some space to enjoy. That's a
little there are requirements in there about the yard space, how big they... I almost feel like Kirkland...
Most of the, to use the cottage company again, most of their projects have a couple of things separated. One is the parking. Very unusual would it be if the car parks near the building that the occupant lives in. Most of them have a shared garden space, like a pea plat, if you will.
On the side of the green.
Yeah, or somewhere associated. Most of them have a common house, maybe they have a kitchen in it, put it on the beds. Most of them have a meandering pathway that kind of connects but also breaks up the field when you're looking out across the green. It's not like you're staring right at your door. There's some kind of landscape going on. So it's not like a traditional house or a traditional neighborhood as we know it. Go back to old Europe, but not here. So, this is how the landscape breaks up with parking lots. And I don't think people think of backyards because they've got that in the front yard.
Well, that's the difference. So, if you go to M, it talks about private yard space, and it says basically each dwelling unit shall provide a private yard space, private front yard space, and no dimension of the private yard shall be less than 9 feet. So,
my notes are 10 to 15 feet for that, and then rear yard 15 to 20 feet.
In that particular sentence, I recommend we change the word should to shall. It's the only way you're going to get it.
I love shall.
Yeah. It said shall.
Should is optional to a developer. I like shall. It needs to be a four sentence. Question, way back to right above F on the previous page. Is S a crow flies a technical term?
Is it a fast crow or a slow crow?
It's separated by another, not less than five feet, as a crow flies. Is that right above, sentence above, paragraph F?
Yeah, I can change that. I did that late last.
What is that?
Yeah,
in the technical book.
I was struggling with as a straight line.
I just
put as a crow flies and thought, well, I'll fix it when I have a better return.
It's a small town character.
It's not, you know. So I can, when I put it in there, I thought, well, at least somebody will read this and might smile.
You just got to step up and give me a rest. I've called. We haven't read it. I read it.
So I can adjust that because I agree. I wasn't loving that term either.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan.
Yes.
And then your point of line M should is not strong enough. You want that as private space as required or something to that nature is? You want to put it in the strongly?
Under private yard space, shall be provided to contribute, not should be.
Okay.
I think we always understand that shall is more definitive than should. Should's kind of wishy.
Yeah. You got that.
Sheds are still thinking about it.
All right, anything else for N through R?
Yeah, so I need to back up a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Just missed the notch.
Hold on. I haven't heard from Mr. Von Trapp.
I wanted to go backwards.
He was getting my back.
Okay.
How far back were you?
Do you guys just want to write now, just everybody put a page number on their document?
So
starting at one on the front. So
three.
One.
Are you going to go back? Yeah.
One is cottage residential carriage and two-unit homes, chapter 1811. Two is housing types defined.
Okay, so you're going to the back.
Six is cottage housing design standards and guidelines, 1811.06.
Okay, I have 13 pages, 14 really, if you, 14 is the last page.
Are we counting the handout?
I put that, that is for me 11.
Yep, that would be 11.
Thank you guys, this will be easier.
Good suggestion, Ms. Easter.
Okay, I'm number 8 now, how do you get to
that? Oh my goodness, I can crack you now. Okay, page 8.
Mr. Von Trapp, when you're ready, please lead us off to the page.
So, Mr. Chair, you mentioned the vegetation coming later. However, I read that page 4 at the top, for E, section A, top of page 4. 5-foot average buffer containing preserved significant trees and reduced vegetation. Is it this whole section here?
No, I was thinking of page 7.5, where feasible existing mature trees should be retained.
Okay.
I have to input a requirement for the trees to be retained there.
So,
if this is what we want as a community, then we're going to require it as a community.
And I agree, and I guess I kind of saw that. That's the being addressed here.
That's the buffer outside buffer space.
No, this one is actually the separation between. So, the way this is being drafted, what we're saying is, if you do a cottage cluster of 24 here, two clusters of 24, each cluster shall be separated by a 30-foot average buffer containing significant trees or revegetated to accomplish that.
So that's kind of my point of contention.
Okay.
So looking at Polygon,
yeah.
And they're down by Cascade Covenant,
mm-hmm.
and how they applied this similar standard.
They didn't apply the standard. This is new.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. That was unclear in our last meeting.
So, yeah, what they applied was what's in the code right now, and they...
Which we thought was going to provide a certain buffer that is not what is actually there. The image that I had in my head was that there was going to be more tree
retention.
And so I'm deeply scarred by that. You know, I look at Cedar Falls as just a beautiful drive. I love going up there. I don't do it often. And I think when you bring in and or revegetation, you open up that possibility. So maybe we can talk about it later, but I would like some specific wording on like mature trees, but I know what also goes along with that are certain practices that retain that and don't damage the root system, which is pretty common in new developments.
So, in a lot of King County standards, they require a permit when a tree is 12 inches in diameter or more. I kind of lean towards a requirement being somewhere around 24 inches or more in diameter as a significant tree in my head. I'd like to hear what you all think of what you think a significant tree that we might require is.
because I know we've got some big ones here and there that are certainly 2.5, 3 feet.
So would you keep a 130-year-old alder that was going to fall next year because of its diameter?
Good point. So if we're going to be species specific.
We are. We have a whole
set. It is, right? It's great, but not great. Yeah.
So, you guys, we have a whole section of the code, so that we, just bear with me, because I'm not trying to say no or yes. I'm just saying, like, whether it's a good idea. What I am saying, though, is there's provision. So we have a definition for a significant tree based on whatever type, deciduous or. And then we have in the code a preservation requirement for each development. What you're saying is that preservation requirement is too low. Because, yeah. Now, try to think about, like, the reason why we say and or restoration or revegetation is a lot of times you'll clear and you actually find that, or they'll go to develop and they'll be like a buffer. And some of the buffer has some trees, but then the other buffer is just blackberries. That's kind of that part of it, is to ensure that they actually have to go out and make the buffer a buffer of a type 2. The difference also that you're going to see with this code is we're saying along Cedar Falls Way, we have a 15-foot right now corridor that is grass that the city owns that's where our sewer line. Yeah. And truthfully, I feel like that should be planted. We should plant that.
But that would have to be after the sewer line was installed.
Right? So sewer line's there, okay? So there's always a debate between planning and engineering as to whether you can plant over or in and around these sewer lines. Now, the arborists, you know, with the way that the new installation of the sewer lines are, there's a discussion that I can't. But either way, that 15-foot corridor is grass. Then what we're saying is the next 15 feet, which is on private property, has to be dedicated. So there'll be a 30-foot landscape strip, of which 15 should be the trees that are to maintain those trees along Cedar Falls Way. So the last development didn't have any of that. It was just you need to save like 10% of trees or whatever it was. And they did that.
On the whole lot.
On the whole parcel, right. Yeah. And then they had to pay to a fee in lieu. They had to pay, anytime you take down a tree, you have to pay, you either have to replace it 3-1 somewhere in town, or pay a fee in lieu.
And that's great in 50 years.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, you drive to Snoqualmie Ridge and you see what was and you see what is. And I don't know what their standards are, but I know what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the students are, how do we word that to close any loopholes that could create stuff, because they're replanting, they're doing the revegetation, but we're losing something that's, I feel like, is a hallmark of our city. And one of the gateways we've talked about.
If I throw something in the mix, I would not focus on restricting removal of trees other than those that are truly significant, right? And I would say whatever tree you take down that's below that bar, that's kind of in the gray area, that's trees you think about, like, hey, this is I recognize it as a nice tree. Maybe that's an 8-foot diameter or something. And you say, look, if you take a tree out, it's going to cost you $5,000. Let them do the math in the development process. And they'll save the trees. If it's costing $5,000 to take a tree down, they'll
save
like
you
that
option.
I don't like that at all.
But that's what's just happened. Right? That's what they kinda did.
This is big business. I see Councilmember Patterson almost crying that she's losing the trees.
I'm all for that, too.
You know, she's almost crying on council chambers about losing the trees. She wants to leave the trees. And I can agree with that.
I do, too. But I also, this is the piece I come back to in so many instances. I know what that does to the cost of a home.
Yeah.
If you leave one tree where there could have been a home, all the other homes are paying for it. And it's exponential through the whole plat. So as much as I hate the idea of turning land into farmland before we put a house on it, there's got to be a balance, and I believe in the market to fix it. I believe the developers are smart. I believe if they decide to spend money and take a tree down, it's probably the best use of the money and the cost of the home to resolve.
I'd like to tell developers who work around our objectives, not their objectives.
So, to that note, Jenna, you were pulling up some standards that we have in place.
Yeah, but I'm actually, I went beyond that because, you know, it's funny, you guys. I'm sitting here thinking about when we created those significant tree standards, and there was a concern at that time, and there was a provision that allows, like, it requires a retention and then allows a cut in that retention. Anyway, so now, well, I mean, I'm assuming that you're going to be getting the, you know, my plan is to bring the significant tree ordinance through this year, too, because this is something we want to, you know, want to address. But in this one, you asked what could we do to tighten up the language. And we could say, I'm on that section that, yeah, page 4. Let me get to it because I was working off
page
my...
Page 4, point A1.
Yeah, A. So, an average 30-foot buffer containing preserved significant trees and native vegetation, period. Okay?
And vegetation.
And native vegetation, because you want the undergrowth, too. Mm-hmm. If the existing vegetation does not contain significant trees, revegetation...
with type 2
shall I don't know if revegetation is the word, but do you see where I'm going?
Revegetation, could that be berry bushes?
No, type 2 landscaping is very clear, yeah. Does not contain significant the buffer area shall be revegetated to achieve a type 2 buffer. Sound better?
I think that's getting closer.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Can we back up?
Because that is going to encourage them to plant that 15 foot.
So yeah.
Area, correct?
This would just be their 35-foot buffer. That's no, what they do with the cities.
This is, the cities, we got to deal with getting public works on board.
That, to me, that's a great balance.
Or put the trail over that.
Again, you're giving the developer some options in the moment.
And how to situate things.
Hey, the DA's that lined up to take that tree down. Well, okay, I got to replant that. Got to be a certain classification. Mm-hmm. That's a decision point. And you help them get to a place they're not stuck. That's pretty good stuff. I'm trying to remember what page. I've been coming to come back to this page.
You wanted to come back to a page, but...
I think it's number 4.
Okay.
If I put my numbers correctly.
You have the floor, Mr.
Thank you. So I was looking at A, which it should be the top of everybody's page 4. Yes?
Small with CR zone.
Small one, next CR zone. Little A, yes, thank you. So there's this, the second sentence in the first paragraph. In order to include a standard, there's no S there, I think.
Yeah.
Single family home.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what is meant to be said there?
Thank you. Single family development.
Okay.
A cottage development of not less than 24 units must be proposed or already exists. The point we're trying to say is somebody can't just come in and say, hey, you know, you allow a standard size single family up to 20 units, so that's what I build, I'm going to do that. But this is the cottage zone. So this is actually one of the sections when I say important, this is draft. So I want you guys to picture this, because what this does is it does this. Say you have, this is a cottage cluster of 12, okay? Another one, sorry, I'm trying to draw fast, of 12, okay? So if we have two cottage clusters of 12, this is, let's just say, the street. Then what we're saying is there's got to be this 35-foot buffer. Okay? And then what we're saying is standard single family of not more than 20 units, okay? Because what we're trying to do is, if you remember, Kirkland's is infill development. If we don't require a mix of a different housing type, what you're going to get is that whole area just built with little cottages, which, you know, it seems like a lot. So then you could do 20 units here, and then it would be another cottage again.
Now, in that 20-unit area, is that the LDR?
Yes.
So that's more than four per acre?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, that's kind of the, so what we're kind of trying to do, which this is why I'm still working it through myself, is we're actually creating, what we're trying to create is a more natural mix of, like, okay, we've got some cottages, then we've got a green belt.
That buffer is workable as long as you're leaving variable size trees in it.
Yeah.
This is a 25 foot momentum or feet, that's a 35 foot buffer. You can get, in these areas, in this strip, you can find, you know, significant trees and major size trees within that 35-foot buffer. That would be, in my view, a good compromise, you know, setback between those two units. You'd actually have a distinct difference with that within 35 feet. You'd feel it. If they would leave them.
Does that help, Jim?
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. So B, I just call it the 10-minute walk again.
Mm-hmm. The crow flies.
Is that anywhere else? That wording, is that just kind of here?
The 10-minute walk.
Yeah, the walk.
That's just a normal, like. I don't think that has any implications on.
I just don't remember reading it before.
Yeah, we've been talking about it. It's kind of, there's a magical way planners look at how far you're putting uses based on walk times.
Yeah.
4 miles per hour type of.
I'm going to go back a page to 3, please.
Sorry, when you say people can't walk, I just went back to Disneyland where everybody was running those scooters that you could drive around on. You saw parents and you saw kids riding.
That's all I'm thinking. Car drives.
Yeah, just
the wheeled ones.
I don't know. The cart. Yeah, they're carts. No, they're carts.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Are you looking at it, Jim?
Yeah. Page three. Item B, max structure size and mix. So this seems like a silly question, but I also want to make sure we're consistent. So square footage gets calculated in different ways, like around the perimeter of the building, and if you subtract the interior thickness of the wall, now you've got living square footage. And I just want to, what are we doing in the cottage is any different than anything else? It's kind of square footage, so the same calculation everywhere.
Isn't it
interior?
It's
the same thing, right?
It was interior. We're not going to do that. We're going to do it like everywhere else.
Exterior.
Yeah. Partly because it's causing our building department. It's just not worth it.
Okay. So if you say it's 1,000 square foot living space, that's a different thing than.
That's real estate. But on the development side, that's the exterior.
Yep. On the fourth, number four there says not more than one 2-unit structure, one carriage unit would be allowed. In each cluster, 12. Okay, so the remaining 10 units aren't defined. Not yet.
Do you mind? I'm totally just back here, and I'm having a hard time right now following and thinking.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what I just realized when we drew this out, which is really good. Our provision here on the buffering says for every 24 units, you provide a buffer, and then you provide a single family home neighborhood. But it doesn't say what you do after that, does it? No. So what we need to say is we need to add this requirement to get another buffer. So I'm going to make a note to do that, and I'll bring back language later. But
you're staying inside the cottage zone. Here.
Yeah.
So it works both ways, left and right.
Yeah, but I don't think the way our thing's written, it says clusters of not more than 12 units per cluster and not more than 24 may be located next to each other. Each cottage development of up to 24 shall be separated by this. So... So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it does say it then.
They're going to bounce off each other, whichever way.
They're going to bounce off each other, so we're okay. Yeah.
That's only a good thing to cover the same plot, right?
Well, the zone, the zone's going to, within the zone, within the lot, you're going to run into a place where you can't keep going about
the system. Okay, because that's the pattern.
Yeah. It's like, for example, you've got 12, 12, 35, and then what is that going? What's the width? We don't know.
If any of us
walk
through this area, this strip between Cedar Falls and Corn
Point,
we'll walk through it. I have, as I look through it, I see a lot of openings. This isn't solid timber. This is, there's been openings made. So when you think about what's there, it's not what's on the board. You're not going to have these perfect 35-foot strips of timber. There's may openings in these buffer zones, so we're going to talk about establishing buffers by planning and whatnot.
That's what Janet was writing, was that it's a 35, and if it's not there to make it a 35-foot type 2 buffer.
Well, I would, Jenna, I would insist that plant at least six-year-old trees, 6 to 10-year-old trees, and they're not going to be 2-year-old seedlings.
Saplings?
Established trees.
We have provisions in our landscape code to do that.
Okay. They have to follow up after a year, right? You get to go
Is
it dead or alive?
Yeah, I think it's 2 years, actually. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, go back to where you were going.
I'm good. So, the question is on page 3, under item B, number 4. Not more than one two-unit structure and one carriage unit be allowed within each cluster of 12. And I'm questioning, okay, so I've got those two units are defined. What about the other 10? What do they look like?
Okay.
So you've got, if I'm reading this right, one two-unit structure and one carriage within a group of 12.
Right, so what's, I think what you're asking me is...
The rest are going to be 1,500 square feet. So you have 10, 1,500 square foot cottages.
Yeah.
Always in a mix of 12.
Not always, because like cottage companies, their homes are all different sizes. But assuming somebody goes and builds to the max.
These are maximum.
Yeah, that could happen.
That's what I'm thinking about.
That could happen.
Mm-hmm. If you take that 12 unit envelope, if the 1,500 square foot units are selling, it's going to be 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, now we're looking institutional as opposed to cottage, because they're going to be the same.
What section are you on? Are you on? Why am I not finding
it? B4. It's what I never page 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're backwards. Okay, sorry.
Yep.
B4.
And we don't allow two-story cottages. That's not allowed.
So with the design dimension, we're going to fix what my concern is? Is it not going to look like 10 identical blue units that are all facing each other?
Well, that part we have. You guys did your residential design standards that require architectural changes.
Is it overlay? Fifth here?
This right now it applies. So the answer would be no, they couldn't just do the same. They could do the same size.
So let me take my concern another more level and say, if I'm a landowner, I bought this parcel of land, and rents are wonderful. I'm going to build 12 units, and I'm going to build 10 of them identical, 1,500 square feet, I'm going to rent them out. Now I just created a little mini apartment complex because that's what the market kind of let me do at the time I was building it. So my concern is, let's not let the economy dictate what our area looks like. We should kind of come up with something that
So are you suggesting, like, in the, is it the LDR, where they have to have different roof lines and...
That is, that applies, right now I'm looking at it, and the, it's, it applies to single family and cottages. The reason why I'm thinking how I'm going to propose doing this for you guys is cottages are naturally different to art, to design, because there's only so many ways you can move the interior walls in a 1,500 square foot building. So, like, we require for 12, for unit, for a project up to 16 units, we require, I'm in colors, but let me go back. We require a number of, you know, elevations and the things you're talking about. What we might do is for cottages, instead of saying, for example, where we're running into problems is 6 floor plans. So six, like if you're trying to build a 2-bedroom cottage, you can only move that. So we're actually forcing our, like, odd walls to be, so what I'm wondering is we'll either have to amend that or bring that design part into this cottage chapter.
If you think it's covered, I'm fine.
It's covered right now, yeah.
I don't want it to get lost in...
It's covered right now to the point almost of it's really over. All right. Yeah.
Cool.
Do
you have any concerns about having attached versus detached? Because when you think about if you're trying to get away from renting, is detached, well, it's more of a house.
It's rental. That just is an extreme. It's just identical buildings. Yeah. It's not a good feel. It's not good for resale. It's not good for anything other than renting. So, again,
so one
you
of the
feel
things
like you've got it in there.
The design we do right now.
Okay. If you look at Aspen Village or Fairway Village up in Snoqualmie Ridge, they kind of have a set look and feel to them. If you are in Beauharts, it's very custom and one-offs, expensive, right? So
well,
we're
expensive, the houses are.
So, well, it's some of them around there, yeah. Yeah, some of those modern ones are. I don't want their tax bill. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to think of how that makes sense with our cottage zone and with affordability, can it be a lower cost by attaching the units and sharing the wall? Sure. Does that fit with the rural character that we're also trying to think about?
Well, you're making my point. I don't want it to look urbanized because it's identical. That's the rural character is unique and it's a little bit... I think we're on the same page.
I think there's a charm in small cottage sustainable units.
But
when
not,
you're putting them together and clustering them, then you get away more into a manufactured kind of...
Right. 1,500 times 10. Yeah. Right. All identical.
I don't have a solution. I get
what
you're saying.
She's got it. Oh, she's got it.
Yeah, our architectural design standards cover architecture. I was trying to explain to a point of almost it's difficult for cottages to do that much architectural design change. So I think we're good. I'm actually feeling good about
okay.
What you get. Where I'm making sure in my mind it all makes sense is when it starts getting laid out.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I have a couple more on this page, if I may.
You can continue.
Moving down at D number 4. If I strike the word carriage through the word however, capitalize no, does that accomplish the same thing? In other words, no cluster shall include more than 1 2-unit home. Isn't that the point you're making?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might just be a... Some of it is like Kirkland, you know, when you... Kirkland wrote it one way, and there's some things that are odd in it, but... So no cluster shall include...
More than one.
Yeah, all right.
And then 5, read through that. Single-story cottage makes each cluster of 12 must provide at least one single-story cottage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was deleting that. Where are you now?
Number 5.
Okay.
Where 1 is repeated.
One, oh, thank you.
And number 6... 2-unit
homes.
You guys are catching my, like, last minute.
Hey, I was drinking coffee and reading fast, and, you know, I had some time, so what can I tell you?
No, these are good. I appreciate it.
And I don't understand the way number six works. Even though I just corrected the letter there, I don't understand. Area up to 25% of the total number of units, rounding up after half of what?
Rounding up 0.5 and higher. So
rounding up of what?
If there's a percentage.
So if it's like following the rounding rules, if it's 1.5, you round up. If it's 1.4, you round down.
Okay.
Two unit homes are allowed.
So let me try the question again. Yeah. So 25% of, you're talking 25% of 12 units, right, in this case?
Yeah. Well, it depends on what they propose. Like if somebody comes in and says, I'm going to build 24, I think it's 25% of 24. If they want to build 12, it's 25% of 12, right?
Well, I'd say, cluster should include more than one.
Yeah, two unit homes. Yeah, I think this is
kind of contradictory.
Yeah, let me think this one. Then let me look at the Kurt.
Yeah, number four on B says not more than one 2-unit structure.
So I don't need an answer now. I just put a dot on it and come back to it. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of the page, number two. Cottage development separation, cottage clusters are not more than 12 units per cluster, because that fits back to what I just said. You're stopping at 12, right? So 25% of 12.
Mm-hmm.
12 units per cluster, and not more than two clusters, total 24, as if I needed to know 2 times 12, may be located adjacent to each other.
Right.
And that's back to your buffer explanation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not very good at math.
I had to think about it. Calculator, and the tape, and everything. That's my back into the page.
Okay, so we've covered page 4 and we were on page 5. Anything for page 4 before I move to page 5?
I was wondering what a half space looked like.
Where are you?
Under G, parking requirements, 700 to 1,000 square feet, plus 1.5 spaces per unit.
It's motor goosey, the tank bags.
Except for my moped on the side.
That's the F space.
It makes sense.
Yeah, the way it's applied is like if somebody comes in with, let's say, they do 3 units, it'd be what? Yeah, 4.5. So does it always end in a 0.5?
Well, it was more for the size of the unit, and it's going to depend on the number.
No, it's, okay.
You have the Prius and the Cadillac Rome to think about, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let me look real quick.
The H2?
Yeah.
Moving apart that. That's why you need 1.5.
The carriage unit would have 1.5 spaces.
It's a great thing that we're doing this parking piece. Because you know what happens with apartment complexes where they're talking about parking spaces. They start talking about, well, every one of them is a compact space. Mm-hmm. Right? So people double park because they don't fit in a compact space. But they get to use the count to get the permit to build the building for dwellings.
Yep.
The other thing I would say as an aside, has anybody traveled up to Library Rock Creek, the apartment complex? Mm-hmm. Never not 20 cars parked on the street. And the last time I stopped and talked to the folks that are managing it, they'll tell you that there's many of the units have twice the number of occupants than they had initially rented for. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, parents' kids move in or uncles and aunts stay for longer than they planned. So anytime there's a rental circumstance, high density like that, just think about it.
Apartments. Well, in
this five,
I guess kind of, Scott, you kind of pointed it out. I mean, units under 700 square feet, but the carriage is 800. The cottage is going to be 1,500. Do these dimensions?
But are they likely to?
Right.
The developer would max it out, probably.
Yeah. Even if you didn't finish the space.
Do we want to adjust those, considering
Why not?
In the amount of permeable space, or is that going to be a limiting factor in itself? Impermeable.
Okay, so you guys, let's hear it.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think in my head how half space works out.
Well, I just looked up how Kirkland does it, and we can add, we'll add, if you guys are amenable to this, I can add a little, I'll add maybe AE that's, or footnote, however I add it, it'll be this. If the required number of parking spaces results in a fraction, the applicant shall provide the number of spaces equal to the next highest whole number.
Your problem here is we're using Kirkland's Centralia. Centralia is the kind of town we want to have, not Kirkland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kirkland was like this.
Mm-hmm.
What, 20 years ago? Not that long ago.
Was that recent?
Little old buildings down on the main street, 85th and you come to town. Single level. 20 years ago.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. Wood structures.
Uh-huh. Not that now.
Okay, so I think we got that one covered. I'm just going to put it right there, but you guys are finding some good stuff. Now, the question on the dimensions, are we good? Did you guys get that one covered, or?
Dimensions of?
You were talking about the 800. The parking, like, just the fact that units under 700.
Well, you're saying if it's a fraction, you'll go to the next higher.
Yeah, so.
That's where we left off,
okay.
So we're good?
So we're good, okay.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Lucky?
No, thank you.
Anything else on page 4? All right, commission page 5. Mr. Heller?
On 5, I had something that under P that maybe could just be addressed in S if we want. Just for community buildings is twice.
Okay, and I had maybe a placeholder saying C for the regulations, and then I actually added it. Yeah, you're right.
So strike P?
Yeah, P can go away.
Yeah, strike P.
Do you guys mind when I do something that doesn't change any of the provisions? I'm not going to show that in a track change, just to try to keep things kind of...
Mm-hmm. Cleaner.
Yeah, okay.
Anything further, Mr. Heller? Okay, anything else on page 5?
Yeah, there's some shoulds that I think should go to show.
I thought you were going to use
it. Yeah. What are your space shells?
I'm sorry, where are you?
M, top line.
Yep, got it.
On Q, second line on Q, where it says all the spaces may not be, I'm saying they should not, shall not be converted. I think one of these may should, just to keep this thing tightened up, not the residential on. R-A, formidable, double I, turbine, as park installs, may be excluded. I'm saying this shall be excluded. Yes, perfect.
Are you guys all on board with the vaulted space shall not be converted instead of may not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Shall not. So shall not. Okay.
What about future owners? Sorry, what's
that? That prohibits it.
The why for that is? Just to keep the square footage down?
This is the...
I think the why, yeah, you could turn it into another bedroom maybe, but really...
You could make it depending on how high the ceiling is. Yeah, it could be like a little movie room or something.
Yeah,
like
I mean...
Seated room where you put the projector out on the other side of the wall in the big space.
As long as it's the interior space, if somebody wants to make a little nook for kids, I don't.
Yeah.
That's the.
The way you comment on them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like we could just delete it.
You're going to talk about it directly. It should be a left. It should be a show or a.
It seems like this sentiment that you're addressing him is that once these are built, you cannot expand the size of that.
Right. That is the sentiment.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to buy it, I own it.
Well, but that's going to... It's the existing footprint.
Yeah, that's the difference to me. You're inside whether you... And
I don't think...
So...
If it's a 20-year-old who has a car parking spot taking someplace, that might be the...
In the interest of time, do you all agree, strike that line? Vaulted space may not be converted to habitable space. Strike it.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you walk that through, though, if somebody owns it 5 years down the road, they want to convert the space. If they do it properly, they're going to come in for a permit. Mm-hmm. That's what they get caught. They'll be figured out at the time.
That would be a hard one. You know, I always think about it. Sometimes you guys... It's one thing to write the regulation, but when you implement it, so, you know, think of somebody coming in and saying, hey, you know, I want to put a little, and they're actually coming in to do it right versus, yeah. And you say, oh, sorry, you can't do it. That's one of those they would go, why, you know?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Dick, then you, Dick, you had something in the next thing under parking that I missed.
Well, I'm getting tired of the shells.
Are you still on page 6?
I'm willing to look at all of that. I'm just saying that there's a...
It is or it isn't?
Top of page 6, the T is there.
R-A on page 5, on R-A, double I.
R.
Third line down.
We're going up. R. Okay. We're going down.
Residential dwelling units with driveways.
Respective required number of parking stalls. May or shall be excluded from the guest parking. I'm just saying the may should be a shall since the parking spots are pretty tight.
So should we just have them go through?
I like the flexibility if they want to build the extra spaces, because you think about that, you know, single parent with a child, they have two cars. So one would be in the garage, one's in the driveway. Or you think about a two-person driving family, they're both going to have a car, so you would still need a guest space.
I say the same thing every time this topic comes up. If there's a good reason to allow it to happen, then you shouldn't restrict it at all. If you think there's a reason to stop it, it should be shall.
I'm always thinking that we're talking about never having enough parking spaces. This would further along that problem.
So you guys are on Q?
No, I'm on.
Yeah, so that's why I don't want to say shall be excluded, may, or is not excluded. If you're concerned not having, not having enough parking, then we should change it so it is not excluded. You see the difference?
Yes.
If I'm understanding it correctly.
Yeah.
You guys are saying R, I? My R is...
R-A-I.
On page 5. R-A-I.
Oh, I deleted that one. Okay.
Well done.
So remember I deleted about that one where I said I wasn't going to show track changes? Okay, double I. Got it.
Yeah, you've got A there too. There's that same R.
Mm-hmm.
Something formatting's going on. Under R, you've got A, and then further on, you've got I, and then A again.
Right. Yeah, okay, got it.
Okay. So, Commissioner Ryan, what is your choice? Are you wanting more parking or less parking?
Dick wants more
trees, damn it.
Power to determine this. Such has been on the Ryan rule. No, listen. I'm almost making a knee-jerk reaction to the mays and shells. I think the mays are two mays of liberal shells. Button it down. No matter what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, this is the determination, though. If they're saying I have a unit and it has a garage and a driveway, and we're not going to require you to have a guest spot, but do you want that guest spot still made or not? I guess. If you want that certainty in the wording.
I guess what? I don't want to invite somebody in my house and have a spot for them to park. Yes.
So then would you be open to changing A2 is not excluded? Change maybe to is not?
Yes. That works.
That is the third line on A2, Jenna. Mm-hmm. Change maybe to is not excluded. And then it's clear that you still have to provide a guest spot.
Okay, one thing that we've been cautioned by, from the cottage company, is there was one city that required way too much parking, and there it just was. They used an example of it. It was empty all the time, and it just kind of created this dead space that was paved. It was paved dead space. So this to me is an interesting code to write, because I think you're dealing with such tight, unique elements that you want every part of the development to be functioning. And what her point was if you overpark it, you have a bunch of dead paved space, and so, you know, would you rather want a tree there or additional parking? So that's where the may allows that.
That's a wonderful point and a great point. And so can we work with that to get an equation where you're going to have a certain number of these, and that we have a lesser requirement for guest spots. So you still have guest spots, but maybe a half a spot for every one of these. So instead of having two spots, you have one spot for every two units.
See, what I'm thinking, the whole guest concept, because I don't think you get one parking lot for everybody. I mean, generally speaking, there's no big separation between.
Well, garages are allowed on some units, so this is like assuming that somebody might have a unique scenario where they have a garage and a driveway, and in that case, that person shouldn't be, that unit is providing a guest space, because.
Or we require three guest spaces for every garage, or for every six units of garages.
I made a run through Canada with one south of Cedar Falls Road. Wonder. Talked to a cop that has a house in there. One question asked him, is there no parking? He says, no. Well, it has that center park, and it's barely any street parking. And he says, anytime I have a family over, they're walking to get in.
Where?
They recently completed development. There's
No, I think you're talking to Tannerwood. It's right by Wood River.
No, this is the one. This is another Tanner development, just south of Cedar Falls, next.
Cedar Falls Way.
Cedar Falls Road, just south of Cedar Falls Road.
Oh, is there just like a dozen homes or something in there?
No, there's 150 homes in there.
That's Cedar Falls subdivision, Cedar Falls, probably.
Yeah. Anyway, he's chatting about maybe 15, 20 minutes. The biggest problem he has is parking. Mm-hmm. You know, this garage is behind. It's a little alleyway to get down to this garage. There's a little street parking. They have to park elsewhere. You know, it's just. But that's the only negative that they must request. You know, hard to get visitors in there.
So this came from the Kirkland Code, right? Mm-hmm. So can we?
So I just, I'm sensitive to not enough parking spaces.
What do you guys?
Can we ask the Kirkland planners if, there's something they would change in this, or because I guess my hesitation in talking with a cottage company and getting their opinion, I wouldn't take that very seriously.
No, I agree with you. Yes, yeah.
I mean they're not going to be there after the fact, most likely. You know, I mean having parking is going to limit probably how much they can build, so they would probably vote against more parking, you would think. But also they wouldn't monitor after the fact, whereas the city planner probably would. I mean you would be out there kind of seeing what's going on. City.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if like a Kirkland planner might have a suggestion on how this actually looks on the ground. Because this has all been built out in Kirkland, right?
There's one development in Kirkland.
Whereas we have none really, you know, built out.
Yeah. Kirkland, the only thing Kirkland did well is it codified their. They only have one development. The examples are, you know, what I think we have here. I don't think that there's going to be enough units that have a driveway that really this is going to impact much. So I'm fine with it. And know, we can look at it and see if we can get some input from Kirkland or what have you. But this is talking about guest parking, so I think we're fine.
I would only stress that we maybe make a note that look for a provision that works something out for these units. So they not held to the same requirement, not excluded from the requirement, but given some guidance as a half a spot, a quarter of a spot per so many units. So that way there at least is some parking, guest parking for a cluster of them.
Well, that's the number one. 10% of the total units shall be guests, or the total number of parking shall be guests. The total shall be guests.
Yep, the required.
Right.
And so we're saying now that they can't be excluded, so therefore they would be.
The applicant shall provide a number of choices equal to the. Oh, I'm not sure. So. So if the total. The way I'm reading this is number one says, let's say there's 20 parking stalls required. 10% of 20 has to be.
2.2.
Yeah, 0.2. So they would have to provide two guest spaces. And then we're saying that if there's a unit with a driveway, it should not be considered one of the guest spaces. So I think we're good.
Okay.
Because we're talking about, I think, such a small, yeah, I think we're fine now.
Page 6. I just want to check in with everybody. I just noticed that we are 9:10.
Yeah.
How we doing?
It's close to 4 hours.
I think we've adjourned somewhere at 10:40 or something like that.
You know, I hear, you know.
Probably because of me.
I think that if I have any say in your guys' evening.
Your vote is?
Yeah. Well, we could keep going, but I think that this code is going to, we need to take our time on this code, because I think this code's really a kind of a unique code. And it's going to, so I think you're seeing at least 3 or 4 meetings more, if not more, on this code. So I don't think it's worth trying to push to 10 o'clock at night.
Can I just make one change before you get embarrassed?
Yeah.
Shouldn't be embarrassed. This is on page.
I never get embarrassed.
On page 10.
Unless it's a typo, like.
On page 10, it's paragraph C, item 1.
If it is the same typo that we always do as planners, item 1.
Second sentence. We'll read the first sentence and then the second one.
Page 10.
Items.
C.
Paragraph C. Item 1. Existing significant trees located adjacent to the right-of-way shall be retained. The retained tree shall be considered the planner's tree.
Oh.
We just
want
one.
Anything you said about each that?
You should have retained tree.
Retained tree.
Yeah.
There's a shell in there.
Okay.
Let me get to that one. So that's what I would think, because now what you guys have given me enough, because I can start going back and thinking through and bringing.
One other point uh-huh. that I'd like to see for the next meeting. When we're requiring mature trees, anything to be retained, I'd like to see a better direction on what we mean by retained and a percentage for a square footage or a class of tree per.
Yeah, okay, so what I'll say is there's a section of our code you should read because we'd implement that.
Okay.
And it is 19, 1910. Mm-hmm. And all the significant tree stuff starts at 1910-090.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And what I, as you think about this, what I want to make sure, because this is not happening right now, if we put in provision in this section that this conflicts with another section, so this provision applies in this part of town, it's getting really complicated, and that's what's been happening. So
we need to write it in the main code so it
can
all the zones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just keep that in mind.
Can we get somebody extra on your staff?
I would love.
Yeah, it seems to me that the cottage neighborhoods are different than other neighborhoods, and the tree requirements are immensely different. If you try and put a tree standard that you get from the LDR community to a cottage, you're going to have no trees, basically. I mean,
I think they
will be around.
I'm optimistic in that I want to change the base significant tree area so that it applies to all the zones throughout the city if we develop differently.
Is it Bellevue or King County's? Their definition of a significant tree is 10 and a half inches at DBH. That's not a big tree, but it's an established tree.
Ours is 12.
It becomes a significant tree within 5 years, usually a 10 DBH. Trees, you know, like that. And in Louisville, it's a pretty significant tree, and within 5 years, you got, you know, a good tree. But those type of trees are usually bumped. When they get bumped, they get nicked. They don't usually come through that. They get.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm suggesting some type of, you know, whatever practice, you know, on site, so that these trees can be preserved. Because not only, I mean, if they get bumped, roots get impacted. Right?
No. So every single subdivision that goes through has a bunch of conditions of approval, and we have a really great arborist on our team. And not that applies to how many got preserved, but what happens is we have now every single plat that gets approved has standards that they have to meet, fencing the tree so you keep trucks from backing into trees or root. So we have, and the reason why I bring that up is we don't want to reinvent the wheel. I mean, I can give all that information to you guys of what we're implementing, but right now I think there's a couple things that happen. We can call it significant trees, but we've actually had our arborists out saying, you know, you got a big kind of wind tunnel effect going on here, and these, you know, and this 10 diameter tree is much better than saving this one that's going to just blow down because of the change. So in the end, there is that science, and so what I'm totally on board, because I think trees are huge. I mean, trees are necessary to break up. We need the verticality to break up the developments too, let alone the environmental benefits. But we're kind of on top of that. What I'd like to do is bring the tree code back though, and increase the percentage of retention. We'll get that more with this one because we're going to require the buffers and the corridor along Cedar Falls.
So you have to be smart about what trees you keep, and you better keep your clusters and some of the materials.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
the book is not going to look rough. It won't look rough.
I have a comment on the vegetation.
The what?
On the vegetation topic.
Yeah.
So, Exhibit A.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if we could do have a ground survey on Exhibit A, or at least an aerial photo review. I think I mentioned it last year, but just looking at, it looks like these are kind of intentionally drawn. Or maybe, I don't know,
rough draft, but I would propose looking at where these cottage clusters and where the buffers are and matching it with the existing bed that I have on my map, but in particular the diamond group of single family lots, and that's a like your access point one with a diamond and coming up with single family lots in there. And by looking at the aerial photo, I would propose that that's actually the buffer. So it's just something that I think is, would be good to do. I don't know how this was formed, if there's a reason why it is the way that it is, but I would recommend working it based on the existing significant trees.
And is there any, like, hard science into what they're proposing in the document, or is this just kind of a general guideline? How would we go about doing that?
Well, I think we need to talk a lot about what your goals, what when you take all the goals and put them together, and then you also, because we can't just design it for them, and we're doing we're getting
very specific.
Yeah, to the point where it's so. For example,
why this? Just explain. Can you explain the why it was drawn like this?
No. You're to write the regulation, and then
we dictate the zone, but we don't do the site plan.
So yes, I can give you why.
Okay.
So
if the land conditions aren't considered, as a plan is made down that way.
And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, you're providing regulations that are going to govern a region, an area of your town. When you start getting really specific, you also have to realize that this guy might not develop with everybody else, right? Or they might just build one home, or there's so many so it's more about creating a regulation that can be implemented across the board versus like literally drawing where the streets go for them and where everything goes. We're starting to get to that level. But the reason why, so here's the reason why. The streets are lined up with other existing intersections to create safe intersection spacing, okay? The city council and we have planners feel that when you look up a street, what will break up your perceived impact of density is to look up the street into a green treed area versus, and even the impacts of driving up the street, your headlights aren't shining into a cottage cluster or what have you. So putting the buffers at the end of the roads as terminuses. When you're driving down Cedar Falls, you're driving across a bunch of trees. You look up a road and you see a bunch of trees. Okay, so that was one of them. Then the next, so that's kind of why that we put the green buffer areas. The spacing is also what we did is we kind of took what we think is about would accommodate a cluster of 12, and then a buffer, and then so. Then what we did is on these weird parcel-shaped parcels along North Bend Way, Cedar Falls Way, they are so narrow that they're not really great for cottage development and tree retention. So what we're saying there is we're going to go with the LDR, which is the lower density, because I think in some of them you'd only get two units. So because those are just going to be one or two or three, four homes, we haven't gotten specific on buffering within that parcel. If there's a certain stand of trees that you feel is really valuable, that's a place, you might want to put valuable.
I like your explanation in the line of sight. That's good. I'll just pass this around. It's that triangle section. It's probably the best stand of trees. And I get it, not like protecting an individual tree or something and really getting real specific, but this one in particular is a good, is worth considering. getting on the ground. I haven't looked on the ground. I'm just looking at aerials, but they look good.
So are we, because we can't just, you can't.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. They aren't proposing development, so we can't walk on the property.
So maybe you can't do a ground survey.
But what you're saying is what we are doing and thinking about. Whether we nailed it yet or if there's a different way to do it, I wanted to take a look at it. Because we did actually do that to a certain degree. Thank like, you. For example, on Stilson, you'll read in the document there's a lot of language about requiring a 30-foot setback to retain those trees and that. Mm-hmm. And
is
kind
that
of,
the same as 432nd?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jenna, very much
for
that description. Scott, seems like it met your need. Okay, so I'm going to close our discussion on the cottage standards. Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody, on the commission for all your thoughts and all the input. The map that was handed out is in relation to the building permit activity report that we get, and our frequent questions of staff are always, where is that? And Tom was so kind to say, hey, Gary, have you seen this when I went to the office this week? And I said, oh, that would be great for the Planning Commission because it answers 90% of our questions of where is that? So, with that is the development projects of North Bend, and where I also see this valuable is when we get to talk about transportation and planning for roads, you know, you can really see where it's happening, but it's not in one spot, it's everywhere, so really, I'm glad I'm not in our public works department.
Got a question, General, is this McFarland's Sunrise View, Rob's property?
It is. It is. Our old chair's property.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah, McFarland's. Yeah.
While you all look over the map, just take a
can I see that?
Here.
Mm-hmm. The area.
Yeah. Did everybody successfully log on to the new email system? If not, do you have your directions? Do you need me to forward them to you so you can do that?
Yep, please.
I have a thing done. Yeah, I tried to follow them. It did not work.
It did not work. Anybody that...
I haven't been on it.
I've got on fine.
I never got a notification on it.
Was that on PC?
No. On my phone and PC, really? Yeah. Hmm. And I use Chrome.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm still not on.
Yeah. Well, if you're on the email at all...
I'm on email, but I wasn't able to get any information this week or last week. Ever since the change, I haven't been able to get on. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, I will have, how can I help you guys?
What's your IT guy?
We got a new guy.
Okay.
Steve. So maybe I'll send an email to Steve that says, hey, the Planning Commission's having trouble getting on, but they still need to get a hold of you.
So
I'll probably have to give them your phone numbers. Is that all right?
I can send them the email from my personal account that has all the documentation. That if you guys can follow the Word doc that was prepared, it was easy enough. I did it on my phone. And,
there you go.
Yeah.
So you got to send it to their personal email, though.
Yep, I do.
Mr. Chair.
So it sounds like it's just Mary.
The problem I had before is I tried to set it up, and you type in the domain and all that stuff, and it didn't work, so they had to go reset.
Oh.
It's much easier now.
Okay.
It's Office 365, and it's pretty simple of a login.
If you have Office 365.
If there's no more business, I'd have to make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Second. Motion to adjourn by... Commissioner Ryan, second by Commissioner Von Trapp. All those in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The commission stands in favor at 9:30. Thank you all.
You know that.